Welcome to The Lorraine Murphy Show. I'm an entrepreneur on my second business, a mentor, an author, wife to a fellow entrepreneur, and mother to a magical little girl. On my podcast, I explore topics that fascinate me that will help you unlock ideas to rise even higher in your life. Myself and my special guests will be talking entrepreneurship and how to build better businesses, organization and figuring out how to get more shit done quicker and smarter, staying in touch with our soul, and how to blend business babies with real babies. Let's jump in to this week's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of The Lorraine Murphy Show. As always, I am very, very happy to have you joining me. So, unless you have been living under a rock, you'll probably be aware by now that this season of the podcast, season 8, which is crazy, is all about one of my greatest passions, which is business. I've had my own business since 2012, and entrepreneurship is a pursuit I devote a ton of time, energy, and focus to, whether it's growing my own business or mentoring others in theirs. In this season, I'm taking you behind the scenes of my business, as well as interviewing business owners I respect enormously, one of whom is joining me in this week's episode. I am thrilled to be sharing with you this week a chat with one of my entrepreneurial buddies. This woman is the epitome of a business visionary. She saw an opportunity and started an industry a whole 18 years ago. Food delivery is one of the fastest growing and most competitive industries in our world right now. And Bianca Monley, my beautiful friend, founded Eat Fit Food at the very ripe old age of 22, a whole 18 years ago, and ran the business until she sold it in 2018. And she did years of running the business with three kids under three. Gulp. She's an award-winning entrepreneur who has built a multi-million dollar business. And as I said, she's just the epitome of a business visionary. A year on from selling her business, we had a very honest and very far-ranging conversation about the highs and the lows of her business journey to date, including her experience of being an entrepreneur before it was, inverted commas, a thing, and starting a health company long before it was cool to wear activewear outside the gym, how she started an industry 18 years ago, how the costs of scaling meant she didn't make any money for 10 years in the business, ensuring the values of her business permeated right through the culture, so how she did that from the team members to customers, how reinvention was the key to Eat Fit Food staying relevant for an entire 18 years in what became an incredibly competitive industry, how she overcame her paralyzing fear of leading a team, what the 51% boss, 49% rule is, her motto of nail before you scale, and how she lived that lesson herself in her business, the tech headaches that cost the business $600K, the two A-list celebrities that changed the game for the business, the single scariest time that she has experienced as an entrepreneur, and also the grief that came with selling her first business. I am so excited to bring you this chat. I think you're going to love it. So let's bring on myself and Bianca. Hello, Bianca. I'm very excited to have you.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And you've got pink hair, which is exactly what I did after I sold my first business as well. So
Yes. A bit of a change.
Yeah, just a bit. But it's nice and subtle though. I like it. It's like a wash.
Yeah, thank you.
I was kind of preparing briefing notes for you, and there's just so many reasons that I'm keen to talk to you for this show. Because obviously you've built an insanely successful business. You've pioneered a whole industry of all of its own. And you also did it with three very, very small children. Mm-hmm. I was trying to guess your kids' ages earlier, and I thought that two were slightly further apart. And you're like, no, they're 6, 5, and 4. Like, oh my God. And I should also say the first time I met you was at the Veuve Clicquot Awards. We were all up for that award with a few other amazing women, and you won that night. I remember going up to you, and it was lunchtime, and saying, congratulations, this is so amazing. And you were just so happy.
Thank you.
I'm excited to have you.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Now, I obviously know about your business journey, but there's so much. You just mentioned that you're writing your first book at the moment.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about your career journey so far? Like, how did you get to the point that you're sitting talking to me today?
Sure. Well, I was in New Zealand, moved to Sydney when I was around 20, and I actually left school a year early. So I didn't make it through to the end of school and I didn't know what to do.
So why did you leave school?
I wasn't an academic. It just wasn't for me, and I wasn't going to go to uni, but I didn't know what I was going to do. So I left a year early and then went and studied to be a childcare teacher of all things.
No way!
Yeah, so I got qualified in that and then just taught childcare in New Zealand for a few years. And then I moved to Sydney and was working for a gym and sales, and quickly managed to sell, you know, I guess worldwide the most memberships that had ever been sold in this company. And like any corporate company, they go, "That's great. Now can you do this for us?" And it's climbing that corporate ladder. And I said, "Thank you very much, but I'm out of here." And I started my business in 2002. I was 22 at the time, and I got the idea, I guess, from seeing people come into the gym and what they were eating. So they were on protein shakes. They were taking things to make them train harder. There was just no real food in what they were consuming. And I thought, there's a gap in the market here. Why can't being healthy, be something that you love doing? And so being from a restaurant and foodie family and background, my parents owned restaurants when I was a kid, I started developing these fresh meals and delivering them fresh daily to my friends, and then it grew from there. So,
You're cooking all the food yourself?
Originally I was.
Yeah.
My brother is a chef, so I pulled him in for a little bit.
Handy, yeah.
Yeah, and my sister, I pulled her in for a little bit. She was interested in health, and yeah, there's both those things didn't really work out.
Wow.
So, and then ended up, cooking myself, and then just employing people as it grew over the years. So,
'cause I think what we need to remember as well, like, that's almost 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
And I think about now, I mean, I think even in the last 2 years, I just realized I could actually eat without leaving the house. So there's so many different options to get food delivered. But back then you were saying that Light and Easy had the frozen delivery.
Yeah, that was
and that was it.
That was it.
Like, you started a whole industry.
That's it. That was it. There was no one doing fresh meals daily, and, you know, no Uber Eats or there is a lot of options out there at the moment.
Wow. So, yeah. And it's even just blowing my mind thinking about how it would be to start a business in 2002, because I started my first business in 2012.
Yeah.
And like, we had like Xero and co-working and like, the world was set up then for entrepreneurs to start businesses reasonably early, but you wouldn't have had the cloud.
Oh, no, like,
had to own a server.
I don't think entrepreneur was even, you know, a real word back then.
Yeah.
It's all the very trendy thing to do now, but it's just about dedication and hard work. And that would start on a Sunday. I would get up at 4 a.m. and go to the markets, load the car full of fruit and veg, go home, cook up the meals, package them up, do the accounting, and then I'd wake up at like 4 a.m. every day, hop in my Hyundai, like, green car with meals in the back, and then I'd actually have keys to the client's house back in those days. I did it, and then
I'd get
into the house and put the meals in their fridge for when they woke up in the morning. So, yeah, that's how it started, just doing it all myself. So, but because of that personal experience, and that's, you know, they would talk about me and tell their friends, and I think that was one of the key things which helped make it grow was, you know, the personal experience.
Oh, I just got goosebumps when you said that. Yeah. That's beautiful. I love that. Mm. So, and this is kind of more of a retrospective right now, and I want to go, as you know, into a lot of detail on how you've done this. So your vision, I mean, do you remember when you started the business back in when you were 22? Do you remember having a vision of what it would be like to own your own business? Like, did you have any kind of assumptions about that?
This is the funny thing, because all my friends were going and traveling overseas.
Yes.
And, you know, you reach that age, you're like, woohoo, we're all going to London and traveling. And I thought, okay, I've got an opportunity here. What I thought would happen, I was like, okay, I'm going to start this business, and in 2 years from now, I'll be able to sell it, and I'll be hugely cashed up, and or leave and have somebody else run it, so I can go traveling and have enough financial support behind me to do so. And
that's progressive for, you know, a 22-year-old, but also back then, you know, you wouldn't have had those models around you of people who were doing the same thing.
No, I think it just. Whoa. Dedication of something that you're passionate about.
Yeah. But, sorry, I interrupted you. So the plan was 2 years, I'll go traveling.
The plan was 2 years.
Yeah.
Like 18 years later.
Yeah. So why did he leave after 2 years?
Because it didn't make money for 10 years. It's the everything that we made had to be put back into the business.
Yeah.
So you'd have 10 clients, 20 clients, then you had to buy vans, then you had to invest in kitchens, then you grow out of that kitchen, you had to employ more staff, then you had to get a bigger kitchen, more vans. So then we opened in Melbourne. So as it grew, every cent just kept going back into the business to grow it. So
yeah.
It wasn't a stage where you could exit. And I love doing it. I really, really enjoyed it. It was the challenges that came along with it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Which I really want to get into in this chat as well. The idea from the actual business came from the fact that you mentioned that your family were foodie. Mm-hmm. Were you into health yourself then as well?
Very much so.
Because I see you as a very fit person.
Yeah. I love exercise. Meditation and eating healthy. It's just the way I live my life. But at the time I was working for a gym chain that was called Healthland back in those days, which is now Fitness First.
I thought it was Fitness First when you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I was in sales. So I've always led a healthy lifestyle and, you know, my growing up with my mum who exercised every morning, and I got that from a very young age and we never had processed food in our house. I'm one of four children. There was a 10 kilo bag of apples in the corner. There was no sugar. So that's always healthy food and just eating real food has always been part of my life. So it's just seeing people eating processed food and protein powders and things like that is just.
And you wouldn't have had anywhere near the kind of the healthier versions that we have now.
Oh no, there was nowhere to get healthy food when I first started. You couldn't even go out. No one was wearing fitness gear outside of the gym. That was an absolute no-no.
Yeah.
Turmeric lattes were like what exists now is this massive wellness industry.
Yeah.
It did not exist then. You could not get anything to eat healthy anywhere. So that's one of the other reasons why, you know, it grew and became so successful.
It's just amazing how much vision you had. It's just incredible. Mm. So you mentioned that back in the very early days of Eat Fit, and was it called Eat Fit Food?
Eat Fit Food, yeah.
So the name stayed the same for 10 years. Cool. And still is. So you were there, you were, as you said, going to the markets on Sunday, you were preparing all the food yourself, you were delivering it in your cute little green car. And what were the kind of the three key things? Because a lot of businesses go out of business. I mean, I hate reading those stats on how many businesses go out of business after a year and then 2 years and then 5 years and 10 years. It's terrifying. I remember every year when my first business ticked over another year, I'd go back and look at the stats and go, okay, we're now in this percent of the percent of the percent of people. So what were the three key things that step changed you to being able to scale that business? Because I know with the women that I speak to in business, you know, scaling is such a big preoccupation. Like they want to grow it bigger so that they're not on the tools as much and all those all that kind of thing. What were the three the best decisions do you think you made back in those early days that meant that you grew the business that you went on to grow?
I think, number one would be creating that customer, the brand experience and what I touched on at the start. It's not necessarily, you know, what does your logo look like or what does your Instagram look like? It's the whole experience that your customers have interacting with your brand. So, you know, that was whether that was me on the phone or developing something that keeps them coming back and keeps people referring to you. I think that's absolute key. Who answers the phones? And when I had Eat Fit Food, the girls that I had were, you know, they were passionate about the clients, and still to this day, the clients are. You know, I remember I couldn't eat this or couldn't eat that. And the best thing was having those girls on the phone to talk to when they were going through detoxing problems or, you know, I can't do this on day three. And it was that personal experience. And that went from the quality of the food, how the meals were delivered, if there was any big issues, they could interact with me direct. And then everyone that I employed or the girls in the office had, you know, the same vision on the business that I had, and that so they'd interact with the clients as if they were me. So I think that's one of the key things is the brand experience.
Yeah, yeah. And can I just pause you there on that? Because I think we almost look back, we could potentially look back and go, it's kind of whimsical to have the keys to the client's house, or, you know, old school people actually called your business. Everything now goes through like Zendesk or like an Instagram DM or Facebook Messenger customer service or something. But I think it's important to remember that we can still have those personal touches. Like while you don't have the keys to the house, the customers' houses anymore, you know, we can still add those personal touches, even if it's more of an online way as well. So I love that. Yeah.
And I think nowadays it's even more important because no one gets to speak to a person.
Yes.
So if you can do something a little bit different that makes your brand stand out from the rest, that adds that personal touch for the client, then you're well ahead of everyone else.
Yeah.
So that would be a key thing. What would be another, so number two, your company culture. So going back to how people interact with your brand, you have to have a business mission that's set out so everyone that works for you is on the same page with that business mission. So you're all working towards the same goal. For ours, it was changing the way people perceive healthy. So everyone knew Eat Fit Food changes the way people perceive healthy and worldwide. So everyone knew the business mission. Everyone was clear in what they were doing every single day and on the same path. So, and that makes a difference from the manufacturing of the food right through to how people are interacting with the customers, as yet they're all there for that exact reason.
Any third one? So you have from the green card
Third one is you have to love what you're doing. I mean, we've all heard it over and over and over again, but passion and love for what you're doing, because in business, it is challenging. Every day, you don't know what challenges are going to be faced. It's, you know, the driver's had a crash, or you know, someone's sick, or something's happened with the food. Like every single day, you will be faced with a challenge within the business that you have to overcome. And if you don't have a thick skin and you love what you're doing and you're passionate about it, then that can easily weigh you down. You can, you know, that's, you go, oh, this is all too much and I can't do this anymore. And you know, that is that 98% of people in business when it gets too much. So you have to be prepared for that, because that is going to happen. You are going to be faced with many, many challenges.
Yeah.
So if you've got to look at them as something, you know, it's that you kind of thrive on overcoming.
Mm. And do you look back at your Eat Fit Food career, and did you love it?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Your eyes just lit up.
I loved it. I did love it. It was challenging every day, but every time you overcome something, it's so exciting. And sorry, there's just one more point
on
the top three, would be keep reinventing. So you've got to stay ahead of the game and keep creating something new, because things change out there so quickly. For us, we started off doing home delivered meals for individuals and corporates. That's what we thought, just busy business executives. And then it ended up being always had a health focus, but we ended up reinventing. Oh, we did a 10-day detox program all through food, and then a cleanse program. And then towards the end, the whole plant-based thing, I think I brought out like a 3-day vegan reset, which was very successful. But it's like, okay, what worked yesterday doesn't necessarily work for tomorrow. So you've got to be always looking ahead and reinventing. So it would be one of the, top three, four things.
Three, four. Love it. And they're the great thing you did. What would you see, and not necessarily even just in the early days, but over the 18 years that you ran Fit Food, what would you see as your three biggest mistakes? And I know for me, if I look back at my business career, I kind of have a theme. It's like the universe forces me to relearn that mistake again. I go, oh, shit, I'm doing this again. And then you go, okay, let's move on now. What would you see as your three biggest mistakes or biggest learnings?
I think in the early days especially, employing people was, I didn't study business. I had never employed people before. It was like just getting anyone and everyone to help me. But trying to be too friendly with people was probably one of my downsides. So I wanted to be their friend and went over and above to kind of please them. And then they ended up calling the shots more. And I always maybe felt like I wasn't, you know, I was letting them down if I wasn't their friend.
Yeah.
So, and then that became very hard when there was problems in the business, or I really struggled with stepping up and going, this is not right. Or how can we do this better? It was even to sit down in the early days and have a staff meeting, I remember just like shaking and having to ask people of things, which were clearly expected of them as when you employ someone. Mm. So,
but you would have been younger than a lot of them, would you?
Well, I was, I was. And, you know, that was another thing. I was, you know, I was only kind of 22, 23. And yeah, I probably made a few mistakes and people exiting the business in early stages. I'd let all the stuff build and then have to get rid of them and not do it probably in the right way in the early stages. So,
but I have noticed that with a lot of, and I don't think it's just women. I think it's just business owners that, you're so grateful for those staff that you have in the early days that you will fling every privilege and every benefit at them. Like, I'll pay for your parking. I'll take you away for, you know, I've talked to people who've taken their first team members away for like a whole weekend of like theater and 100%. Champagne and fancy. I mean, you fling everything at them because you're just like, please don't leave me.
No, absolutely. And I was very, very, very guilty of that. You know, we offered boozy lunches out.
Yeah.
And yeah, exactly that. I'll pay for your childcare. I'll do anything and everything.
Please don't leave.
And I guess there was a fear-based, yeah, there was fear that if they leave me, then what do? Yeah. Like, I'll be screwed if they leave me. So, well, yeah, you're exactly right in keeping. Yeah. So that was probably one of my biggest mistakes.
But how long did it take you to learn that one?
Oh, years. Like I think you just improve every year. And I also think you can recognize when someone's not good for the business early on.
Yeah.
And you can probably wind that up a lot longer than a lot shorter than it needs to be. So, if you've got that gut feeling that this is just not working out, you're not right. You're usually right.
Yeah.
And sometimes so I used to let those drag on for even a few years and it just sometimes never got better. But every year you got better at it and every situation that didn't turn out, you learn something from it. Mm-hmm. So, I feel like I overcame that and towards the end, I had a really good relationship with my staff and could manage them effectively and also be their friend at the same time.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I remember seeing, it was my very, very, it was at an Entourage event. It was like in my first 6 months of my first business. And an entrepreneur called Liz Volpe came and spoke to our group. She was Liz Atkinson, now she's Liz Volpe. And she talked about the idea that you need to be 51% leader, 49% friend.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I remember some idiot in the room who actually wasn't an idiot who went on to build an incredibly successful business. But she said, do you mean like you track your hours and you say like 51% of your time? I'm like, oh my God. But what you just meant is like when it comes down to it, you always need to err on the side of
absolutely.
The leader and not the friend. That's whereas I think a lot of us do.
Yeah.
Flip over and do it the other way around. So biggest mistake or biggest kind of opportunity for you to improve was team management, like leadership.
Yeah.
Any others? Big ones?
The biggest mistake and the thing I struggled with the most with the business was the IT side of things and the website.
Because when did it start to get more techie? Because back in the days where you were cooking the food, you were delivering it, you were taking phone orders?
Oh, with phone orders and
fax orders?
Originally it was like a whiteboard written on the wall and everyone had a different color and their dislikes. And then we went to Excel spreadsheets and over the phone. And then I opened up Melbourne and that's when we first went online. So that was well into it.
Yeah.
And then opened up Melbourne and people could order online. But because it was built around people's many dislikes for food, it was a complicated system to build. So it wasn't that you choose these meals. It was, you know, we dealt with people's food intolerances and dislikes.
Oh God, I can't even imagine how you do that. It's huge.
My biggest mistake and the most money I lost in the business, I think I engaged with three separate companies to build this IT operating system for the business and front end and the back end. That means it, you know, reports to the chefs and the drivers and it's a whole business operating system. And I think I lost over $600,000 in them. They would say they could do it and they could deliver I think three different companies had pulled out of it and had to, so that was massive.
So how many years did that go on for?
Oh God, I think probably about 6 years.
Shit.
Yeah, and that was probably the last kind of 6 years within the business. There was a lot of loss and a lot of just, IT companies over promising and not been able to deliver what they said they could. But you'd have to pay money through the stages of development too. And then when it didn't work, I mean, no one's giving you, giving you that money back, which was, so that was massive. That was
so the fourth company finally nailed it?
Well, the third one got it. Well, the people that own it now are an IT company. So, and the amount that's involved is, I think they have, you know, four IT people working every day on
the business evolving
it. So I guess, the IT and the tech side, especially in this day and age, is like a number one priority and thing that you need to kind of get right before starting. And that was, that was massive.
So how would you have done that differently looking back?
Well, I don't know. This is the thing.
It's annoying, isn't it? When you're like, I know it was a mistake, but I don't know what I could have done differently.
Well, that's it. I kept going to these different companies and the same thing would happen. And, you know, in the end, it was probably maybe I needed an IT company to be a partner in the business. So they, because, I just, the expense and what people were charging was just crazy. So,
because I guess for so many e-commerce businesses, they can get a Shopify. Background of what's the other one? There's like two, isn't it? So Shopify, you know, there's something that you can just get off the shelf, but you can't. Like, in order for you to grow that business, you actually needed to have something that was going to replace the whiteboard.
That's it.
20 years ago.
But now I think there's so many off the shelf things that you can buy, like Spotify. And the thing with Eat Fit Food, it was started as a personal business, which that was the one thing that made us grow. We can do no this and no that and your meals and no caps because you... We would accommodate for the individual, but the business was built on these types of food ingredients that they didn't need in their meals, which made it so complicated. So by the time we went to build the online version of it, we had this big following of people who knew us for personalizing your meal plans. And we go, okay, we can't do that anymore. So it was the one thing that made us so successful that actually undid that undid us with the website that was just so complicated. But anyway, that
was any other big mistakes or things you do differently?
Simple, like just keep it simple, like making it too complicated. I think any business is you've got to keep it simple, and that's going to cost you less money in staff, less money in IT, less money Eat for food. Because the way that it was run was extremely complicated. So if I started Eat Fit Food again tomorrow, it would be a lot more simple. It would be a lot more simple business model as what I started it with.
How would you make it simpler in terms of just the actual offer would be less comprehensive, what you're offering the customer?
Yes.
Is that what you mean?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've developed recipes around what people didn't like or what kind of things they didn't eat and probably take out half the meals that we had. But that's interesting. That's keep it simple. But
keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it absolutely
big believer in kiss.
Yeah.
So that actually leads me quite neatly onto my next question, because when I look at the business that you've built compared to the kind of the two businesses, well, one that I've built and one that I'm still building, I just can't get my head around the logistics involved, like the getting the food to the people, making sure that like they don't get food poisoning, right down to my husband doesn't like cauliflower, so we don't want cauliflower. Like, oh my God. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you get are you a details person, do you think?
No. I'm not.
So how did you do that? Like, seriously, that is like huge what you did.
So I'm an ideas person. I'm a creative and I'm an ideas person, but I've always thought it's not you that has to be good at everything. People that you bring on board or people that are around you need to be experts in their field and do things better than you can do. So that's what I created with the people.
So you brought the details people in.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm not a nutritionist. I wasn't a dietitian, but I'd get the best nutritionist and the best dietitian to come in and develop the menus. I'd get a chef who was interested in creating raw food and knew more about, you know, raw food cooking than I did. So that was always part of my strategy, was to get people that are better than you. And I think as a really successful leader or entrepreneur running a business, if you can leave your business for a week and not have to tap in and look at it is, you know, that's when you know you've succeeded. Is yeah. You've got great people around you who are offering something even more than what you could offer, because they don't have the skills that you do, and they may mm-hmm. not have the guts to start their own business, but it doesn't mean that, you know, that they, I mean, they can be better at certain things and have a different skill set to you. So, yeah so the logistics, yeah.
And actually, I'm going to jump ahead. One of my next questions coming up was who, I mean, you can name names or you can just name the titles. Who are the three most key hires that you hired that enabled you to be that entrepreneur that you weren't in the weeds of the business every day?
I think the accounting side of things is massive. I hired a bookkeeping company. So it was run by two very good accountants, and then they had, you know, people doing all the bookkeeping. So they took care of all of that, but then could come back with the reporting on, you know, I'd sit down with them, you know, once a month and this is that, and, you know, to know where your figures are at. The food costs are at 25% and the rent costs are at 10% and we knew where we had to keep the finances.
Yeah.
And it's, they're blowing out 2%. The food costs are blowing out 2%. What's happening? Is someone stealing? So being on top of that is vital.
Yeah.
Vital. And, it's, you know, what advice.
Are you? I don't think you can scale a business if you don't have visibility on that stuff.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Mm. And, I think that nail before you scale, going back to
that. Yeah. I've never heard that before. Nail before you scale.
That's interesting, because, yeah, I went to scale towards the end, what was going to, Harris Farm, Caltex, we're about to have Eat Fit Food and everywhere in Australia. And it cost a lot more than what I thought it would cost. And you start engaging in these big companies and you had to have deep pockets. So, you know, they would order, they'd bargain you down in price, and then they'll bargain you down again. So then you're in the door and they try and get you down again, and then they won't pay you for 3 months ahead, but you have to order the packaging for, you know, 10,000 meals. So that was super tough. And then also that put the pressure on the staff in the kitchen. Just everyone was just losing the plot, going, we've just taken on too much. So we were, this is just before the end. I had plans to double the business within 12 months. And it was, financially, broke us. It was, you've got to.
So what happened?
Nail,
did the deals go ahead?
Nail before you scale. No, the people that have taken over the business now, they put a stop to it.
So, right, okay.
Yeah, it didn't end up going ahead.
Holy crap, that's massive.
Yeah. Nail before you scale. Get the business model right.
Yeah.
And especially if you are engaging these big companies and look into, you know, what they're wanting from you, and even long term. And David, is there a buyback clause? Okay, if they haven't sold your product after a certain amount of time, some of these companies then will invoice you for the product that hasn't sold.
Oh, I feel sick. Horrible.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So finance, really big one.
Yes.
As in that know financial
your
person.
Figures. Yeah. Know your figures.
Who else was a key hire for you in order to start a business?
Key hire, I think, you know, marketing and going back to the brand experience is you have your business mission of this is what we're trying to achieve, and then what is it that you're putting out there to the marketplace? So does that match what you're trying to achieve with your business? Who are you and what are you about? So, you know, I've seen many people and a few clients they've got all these amazing ideas, but what they're offering goes out in their EDM or their Instagram or that is completely detached from what they're trying to achieve. So to have key person, like brand and marketing, is that in line with who you are and what you're trying to achieve?
Yeah,
so
consistency.
Yeah. So employing an expert to help you with that. But that also, it depends on what your exact skills are too. If you're a branding and marketing person, then it's, you know, employing that finance person. I know what I needed to achieve with the branding and marketing, but the girls that I had in the end helping me with that were just awesome. They helped take that to another level that I just couldn't have the time to do myself. So branding and marketing. Who are you? What are you about? What are you putting out into the market?
A third key hire?
A third key hire would be, well, it's going back to your, I guess, what's your product and what are you putting out there? And that's, is there anyone, going back to what I was touching on, keep reinventing the things of the tomorrow. I wouldn't employ a chef who just came in and did the exact job that was required of him and not be developing what or coming up with ideas and what's going to be next. So it's that forward thinking person behind your product, whatever it be. Is it a skincare range? Is it a whatever it be? Like, what are we doing next that's going to be different? So that key person, and for us, it was obviously the head chef who was behind the product, the meals, had to be forward thinking. So I would start employ the head chef who loved raw food and was interested in you know, plant-based meals towards the end. So it's like, okay, what's coming up next and how can that person help keep reinventing us?
Yeah.
So, yeah, depending on what your product is or what your business is, but someone to support you in that forward thinking.
Love. Okay. Yeah. So did you have a COO in the business, like to oversee all those logistics, or was it more kind of based on department, like someone was – the COO of their individual department, whether it was finance or product or delivery?
That's
how you did it.
Yeah.
And they all reported into you?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how many direct reports did you have? Are they kind of the biggest size of the business?
I think we had, at the peak, we had 50 staff.
Yeah.
So the drivers and that side of things, I'd never really heard from. I think we had 10 drivers. We had all our own vans, but they would work night shifts. So that was all just
they weren't like in your weekly team whips or anything.
Yeah. No, they just went out and did their thing, did their job. And I don't think they weren't really people.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're delivering throughout the night by 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
The food had to be on the doorstep. So, you know, marketing, finance, and then the production side of things.
So they're three people.
Yeah, three.
Okay. So many of us who are kind of starting to feel, or we have had a business that's successful, you know, successful in vertical commerce is going to be dependent on what that individual person believes or what they value. But you know, there's moments where you go, oh my God, it's happening. Like, you know, the hours that you spend at night working and the stress and the sleepless nights about cash flow and can I pay the team tomorrow and all that shit. Can you identify any of those moments for you where you just go, okay, it's working, it's happening, like this is real?
Yeah.
Have you got any of those?
I definitely can.
That's so good.
It just started probably, you know, after that year 10. The first 10 years was a hard job. 10 years.
You know, I just love talking to you because so many people are like, it's been 10 months, it's not working, what's wrong? You know, I just love the longevity that you, saying? Like slow and steady. It's like, just make, So sorry, first 10 years are tough.
Well, listen, the 18 years are tough, but after the first 10 years, I think we created this really cool brand and everyone wanted to be part of it. And it just, you know, we got Hugh Jackman on board. We had Miranda Kerr on board. Wow. We had Dan McPherson on board. We had, you know, anyone who was a celebrity or athletes who were interested in their health and wellness. When they came to Sydney or Melbourne, they would call me up. Yeah, can you sort our food out? And so it became this thing. It was like a cool thing to be part of. So Hugh Jackman, I remember that there was a picture of him snapped outside Catalina in Rose Bay with his Eat Fit Food cooler bag. So,
oh my God, you could not pay for that.
No, exactly. And then we were doing meals for him. For Wolverine, so he was training for Wolverine. So I was like, hold on a minute, here's like the Wolverine diet. Like, what male doesn't want to look like Hugh Jackman? So, and that was, and it did, you know, it wasn't paid for, we didn't pay him for that, but he just loved it. And we would go over and above to do, you know, whatever meals, and his personal trainer helped us devise the exact meals for what he needed to eat to get these results. So that was pretty cool. So once he was on it was like, okay.
So what, did you just get an email of a photo of him? Like, how did you find out that he'd been snapped at the bag?
Oh, it was in the Sydney Morning Herald.
So you just opened the paper and your bag. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That is so cool.
It was very cool.
So was that one of those moments where you went, oh.
Yeah, it was. And just everybody want, you know, they just would call me, Bianca, can you sort meals out? I'm coming in. Miranda Kerr. We got voted by Gwyneth Paltrow by Goop as one of the top 10 home delivery services in the world. It's like getting an email from Gwyneth Paltrow going, hey, we want to feature you on Goop. I'm like, oh my gosh, that was probably one of the biggest moments. It's like, wow, you're like the health guru internationally.
Yeah, we so that. Much cred.
Yeah, that was massive. And yeah, so it was just, it just was in flow and we just kept getting kind of, busier and busier. And yeah, so that was great.
That's good time. Awesome. And obviously awards. So I saw you in the Veuve Clicquot Award, which meant you went to over to the Champagne region in France and got a tour of the Veuve Clicquot farm.
Oh.
Was that a big moment?
Oh, it was amazing. We, my partner at the time and I went, we were flown business class to Paris. We stayed in a hotel there for a couple of nights. I think, in fact, I was just writing a blog about it yesterday, had the most incredible breakfast and I think it was $250 Australian per head for breakfast.
No so freaking way.
It was all covered by Veuve Clicquot, but breakfast.
$250 breakfast.
Yeah, it was.
Was it the George Sank?
Oh my gosh, it was.
Which hotel was it? Do you remember?
I can't remember.
The George Sank is the one that's on my wish list.
Yeah, the George.
Was it there?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was incredible. And then we got picked up the next morning in a Range Rover and driven out to the Champagne region. We stayed in the Veuve Clicquot mansion. We had our own personal dinner there with the head of Veuve Clicquot internationally. It's like royalty in the mansion.
Wow.
Woke up, trained there in the morning. And then we went the next day for a tour through all the caves, the Veuve Clicquot caves. So we went down.
So the caves is in the champagne the caves?
In the caves.
So it's where the stores?
Yeah, where they store all the champagne. I had got presented with my own bottle of Veuve Clicquot from the vintage bottle down in the caves. And then we had a ceremony where they planted a vine in my name. So they've
I've got goosebumps.
Yeah, it's incredible.
How beautifully done.
There's a whole vineyard and each, the Veuve Clicquot Business Awards, Women Awards have been running for many years. Mm. And each row has a country, so there's a row for Australia
and,
it was pretty cool. So you get to walk down the row and see everyone else who's been there before, and you've got I think we get a lifetime every year on her birthday. I get a vintage bottle of Veuve Clicquot, and then and always welcome to go back and stay there and visit your vine for the rest of your life. So
wow.
Part of the Veuve Clicquot family is it's kind of a
that is amazing because
cool.
That was in 2015-ish would have been?
2016, I think.
2016, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. How cool.
That was definitely a highlight, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. So do you celebrate successes?
I do. But also I think I look at success now a bit differently than what I did before. I was always, driven. You build this business and then you'll get there and you'll be successful and then you'll be successful and then you'll – And
that's why I was keen to ask you the question, because I know for me and a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, I know you're kind of, you have the win and there's so much happening that you're onto the next thing straight away that you never kind of let it wash over you.
That's it.
So yeah, sorry, go on. Yeah.
But I don't think being successful is something that you strive towards. Like why we live in a society where success is about achieving something, and there's so many other things in life that you're successful for. I mean, I'm a mother. Every day I get up and look after my three kids, and am I present at the table with them in the morning, and am I successful as a mother? And I don't think success is it should be measured on what you achieve so much. I think, there's so many little successes that we have in every day in our life, and we should be celebrating those rather than thinking we're not successful in the littler things and trying to, get to the end and I'll be, it's not the destination. I'll get there and then I'll be successful. It's like, well, why aren't you successful right now and what you're doing, and celebrating the small wins instead of constantly thinking you're not enough or you're not successful because you haven't achieved a certain thing. So my mindset around that has changed a lot since not having the business, because I always was that, achieve this and then you're there, and I got there, I was like, oh, I don't really feel like, you know, does this make me happy in achieving this? And I have a very simple life now. It's very different than running a business full of 50 staff, but I feel successful in helping others in business, and I feel successful being a mentor, and I feel successful in being a mum, and I feel successful being present for the people that I interact with now, rather than, you know, just being half there when I had my business. And so I look at things a bit differently now.
Fascinating. I love that. And you've mentioned a couple of times your beautiful family. So you had three kids under three. When I met you at the Vav Kliko Awards, I remember you going, I've got three kids under three. I was like, holy shit, woman. So was that planned that you would have three kids so quickly? Because you would have had your first child when the business was 12. 12 years old, am I right?
I'm trying to do the maths on it. So it would have been about 15 years old. About 12. About 12 years old.
So you're in the business, and had you been with your partner for a while then at that point?
We'd been together for a year when we fell pregnant.
Right.
And had the first. So that was all planned. And then we fell pregnant again, like straight away. So Harper is now six. So she was, Winter was born 1 year and 3 days later.
And then, so you got pregnant when Harper was 3 months old?
Yes.
Yeah.
And then we had finished and we weren't having any more children. And then I went over to Bangkok to surprise my brother for his 40th, and then came back, and there had been a bit of drinking going on, and came back and found out I was 18 weeks pregnant.
No freaking way. Child.
So Finn was born, 14 months after Winter. So 18 weeks pregnant. They were like, went for a scan. They said, oh, that's not just like, about like there is a baby in there. I was like, oh my God.
18. So you just didn't realize because you'd never gotten your period back after having Winter?
I think I had so much going on. I had the two girls. I was running the business. I had bought the farm. We were growing organic vegetables. So we were just to and fro from the farm. And there was so much going on. I just thought I was stressed out and put it down to maybe eating. And
holy crap, woman. So how did you do that? Because obviously the business, you were running the business. Like, it wasn't like you had someone just to stand in for you.
That's when I bought the farm. I employed some senior people and managers to come in and run the business. And
what was the idea behind buying the farm? So you could produce your own produce for food?
Yeah. So going back to what I keep saying, keep reinventing the things of tomorrow.
Yeah.
I knew there was competition coming. I didn't know Uber Eats was coming, but we have owned this industry for so long. It's only a matter of time before the big companies get onto it. So I was like, what can we do that's going to create something really cool and new? And it was coming back to the educating people on where the food comes from. So the big idea with the farm was to bring families from Sydney down with their kids on the weekend. They could pick the veggies and juice them and have that experience, because my kids were eating fruit and veg just out of the ground because they're a part of growing the produce.
But you were living in Sydney at this time?
Well, we were to and fro. So we had we were in, I think, Clove Valley at the time. So we had a house there, and then we had the farm. So we were, I bought the farm, didn't know anything about veggies, planted all the organic veggies, employed a farmer down there.
Wow.
And so we would go. I've employed managers to run the business in Sydney because I had the two children and one on the way.
But it was only at that point that you actually started to hand over more of the reins to the management team. So how did you do it then with Harper and Winter? Did you take maternity leave? Like, how did it work?
No, I didn't do that.
So you had Harper and you went back to work the next week, or like, what did it look like?
Well, you worked from like hospital bed. I think you're still on your phone and working. And I think I knew I needed to take on managers, and I had a live-in au pair, and our dear Carmen, who was with the kids from when they were born. She lived with us for, you know, the first kind of 3 years, who's amazing at that stage. But how did I do it all? Handed it over to the managers, but I took on too much. I took on too much, and I think
what was the tipping? What's the bit that you go, that was just too much? Is the farm or the kids? Which one?
Oh, God, I can't.
Really? It was just all, just all felt too much. I can't even
say one thing. I mean, yeah, I think becoming a mother of three children within 2 years and 2 months.
That's huge. That's just huge.
So I think when I...
But even think about it, your health alone, like popping out three kids and, you know, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. It was lucky I owned a health food business.
Yeah.
I did eat well and growing organic veggies and all of that. So, yeah. But I think just going back to the mistakes is I think I took, when I employed managers in the business, I think I took my focus off the home delivery side of the business too.
Right.
Bought the farm because I was building a farm. I had to run that at the same time. So I put my focus on that and I had been focusing on it for so many years. And I think that was one of the big lessons is never take your focus off your core business too.
Yes.
And I was tired. I was up all night with the kids and then waking up and farming the organic veggies. We'd go to Sydney for a few days during the week, come to Berrima on the weekends, spend the weekend picking the veggies, chuck them in the van, back to the business. So it was just, I think I got to that. I had all these amazing ideas and it all sounds fabulous, but I was that rat in the cage in the wheel. You're just climbing up and it's falling down and climbing up and falling down. So, yeah, I think that was always one of the key points is whether you become a mum for the first time or just keep focus on your core business and don't ever hand the reins completely over to somebody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was your setup in those days? So you mentioned Carmen, who's your au pair, who lived with you. Mm-hmm. Is that how you were able to do it?
Yes, absolutely. And she was an all-rounder in the house, and she also worked at Eat Fit Food a couple of days because she was wanted to be a chef. So she did everything, you know, helped with everything. And it's not even a help with the children. It was, you know, it was housework, children. We're a team together and just did everything together.
What a find she was. Yeah,
she was amazing. I mean, she's like family and it's like we went to her wedding, in fact, last week, and she's like a mother to my children as much as I'm just blessed to have somebody like her.
Would you recommend it? Like having three so close together and just getting through it? I know you didn't plan it.
No, I didn't plan it, but the way they are with each other is like incredible. They've got their own little tribe, and even the last, we're living in the country now, and the last few weeks, I'm like, there's no TV in this house and there's no iPads, and they come home from daycare or school and they go out in the backyard. I caught them the other day with umbrellas under you could hear thunderstorm, and they've like got twigs and they're making little outdoor fires and pretending to toast marshmallows. So they've got each other, which is incredible. And they are all doing the same thing at the same age. So I don't think as a mother or you can suggest to anyone what is right and what is wrong.
It's unique.
It is. And some people can't have children. It's just, whatever happens. It's definitely an interesting ride, and there's never a dull moment, but yeah.
Do you have any regrets about having so much going on when they were so small? I'm not saying you should. I'm just curious because I know for me I had a lot going on when Lexi was small, and it's bittersweet.
I feel like when they're small is when they need you the least because, you know, Carmen could change nappies and feed a bottle and all of that.
It's but kind of physical care, isn't it?
Now that, you know, they're interacting and talking and I think as they get older, they need you.
Mm.
So do I have any regrets? I don't, but when I sold Eat Fit Food at the end, I took them to New Zealand for 3 months and I had no nan. It was just me and the kids for 3 months. And it was incredible. And I think now I'm a mom and doing mentoring side of the business. So whatever I do next will revolve around being able to still be that mom and pick them up from school. And, I don't want to go back to, I'd get home and they're asleep at night and, you know, I wouldn't have much time with them at all. So I don't regret it, but my life moving forward will be very much revolve a bit more around, you know, being a mum and being there for them, which I love.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I remember one of my, she's actually on my board, she's one of my mentors, Marina Goh. Ah. You probably know Marina. And I just realized this, she was with Women's Agenda. She was the editor, publisher of Women's Agenda. And she, as part of that, she needed to travel down to Melbourne every week for one night. And her youngest boy, she got two sons, and her youngest was doing his HSC. And she actually decided to leave that role because she said, he needs me.
Yeah.
This year, he needs me. So she totally changed her role. She went to work at Bauer Media.
Yeah.
And that was geared by her children. And obviously he's like a grown up child, but it just made me realize that, they need you at different times of their lives.
They do. They do. And I think
they need different things from you at different times of their lives, I should have said. Yeah.
Yeah, they do. And I think, you know, that being present when I was in that full on stage of Eat Fit Food and you get home and, you know, your phone's on and it was, they were acting up a bit because I perhaps wasn't there and wasn't present. And I got given some advice and I was like, oh, the kids are just, it's just so hard. And I was having some therapy at the time and he gave me some advice and he said, listen, I hear this with mothers coming in here all the time. They're just like, they want this and they want that. And he's like, all they actually want is you. And I said, I don't have time. I'm doing all this work. And he said, it's not about the amount of time. It's about the quality of time that you spend with them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have even 10 minutes each day with sit down with individually with each of the children, put your phone off and interact with them, play a game, ask questions and actually just be present. He goes, you give them 10 minutes and they'll give you the world of not demanding your attention. And from that day forward, I changed it and I just haven't. Yeah. It's been life changing.
That different.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And it's not the, you know, beating yourself up about being at work and then it's not that you have to be there for 8 hours a day. It's just the quality when you are there, present and let them know that you're there and you're listening to them and you're interacting and you're hearing
that's
them.
Really powerful. Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. That's really great. And we were chatting before we sat down for this interview and we were saying that business is scary. And I love that you're writing your book and you're saying, like, I want to put the challenges in there as well. It's, as you said, I think you said entrepreneurship is kind of like trendy. And back when you started your first business 18 years ago, like it wasn't trendy. What's been the single most scary time in the business for you?
I think towards the end, the whole website thing that I talked about, the IT. So one night, it stopped. And
the website just stopped.
Stopped.
Oh my gosh.
We're talking, you know, thousands of dollars every hour and we couldn't get it back up. And it was a week down. And
shit, you had no website for a week.
No website for a week. So the sales stopped. Website was down.
Pissed off customers, obviously.
Pissed off customers, like they're on a social media and da-da-da.
Oh, no.
Yeah, so, and then to call up the insurance company and to find out I wasn't insured for the loss of the income that week was the bit like hell, living hell. So you've still got all your expenses and everything and just, that was the most horrible. It happened on a Friday the 13th. Actually, it was the most horrible time I've ever had in the business. And you just, So anyway, that was horrible.
Shit. Just not sleeping?
Huh? Oh, not sleeping. Oh no, not sleeping, not eating. Managed to train a couple of days a week to keep my head together, drinking a bottle of wine a night, probably having a few Valiums to get to sleep. It was full on.
Wow.
And so
how did you get it back up then?
Well,
was this the first, second or the third company you were on at this point?
The people that own it now were the guys who have patched it up, managed to put something together, but a very dumbed down version of what it could be. So the finances never went back to kind of where they were because that was horrible. Probably the most horrible week I'd ever had in the business.
Did you have to let anyone go or anything?
There was that. It was a very, very tough time. Yeah.
My gosh. So you engaged that company as a supplier to come and help you fix the website and then they ended up
they ended
expressing
up
interest to buy.
Yeah.
And did you feel like before they did ask that you were, yeah, how did it come about? Like, how did that
decision to sell come about? They built this website and had these, you know, four IT people working on it full time. And that's the business that exists today. But what was actually involved in the IT tech side of it was quite mind blowing. No wonder I hadn't been able to pull it together in all those years. It was until, you know, these guys actually did it. And then I just got, listen, the years before, I sold it, I probably wasn't loving it. I had these three children. I felt like I was a bit of a rat in the cage with the business, the competition. So it all happened around the same time. So all of a sudden, like pretty much overnight while I was having my kids, the market got flooded.
So what was the first time that you were like, oh, we've got a competitor? Who was the first one that you remember? Because obviously there's like 20 now we could probably list.
Yeah, there was always a few like little ones coming in, but probably You Foods was the biggest.
Right.
They came in and they were doing meals for half the price of what we were. Whoa. And they were, the meals were half the size and not great quality produce. But I didn't want to, I love food. I love, the quality of food. Where does the ingredients come from? And I just wasn't prepared to go down to that kind of level with the business to compete with them. I didn't want to sacrifice the quality and what the brand was. Mm. But they came in, and now, I mean, yeah, go and have a look now. It's just the market was flooded. Then Uber Eats came in.
Yeah.
And I mean, they changed the Deliveroo. They changed the whole platform. Mm. And, you know, these guys are, you know, they take a huge amount. I think they did 30%. So I don't, all these restaurants and closing down and people, the convenience of just sitting at home and ordering whatever they want. It's actually quite a sad story for some of the businesses that have lost, you know, or lost their businesses because they've had no choice but to engage these home delivery companies, your Uber Eats and your Deliveroos, but then giving all their profit for that. So either survive and go with them or go down and earn very small amounts of profit. Yeah. So it's, yeah, you can have anything delivered these days. So the way that changed, it definitely changed everything. So I lost, I mean, I'd been doing it for a long time and it wasn't, I now had these three beautiful children that I wanted to be with more and so I just thought, I need a break. Like I really need to get out. And I feel like towards the end, I probably lost myself. I feel like I was known as Bianca who owns Eat Fit Food, and that was my identity. And when I left and went to New Zealand and I didn't have that anymore, I was like, okay, well, this is kind of cool. I took three kids, three suitcases, and that's it. And we spent these 3 months in New Zealand, and I got the time to sit with myself and go, okay, what do you really want in life? What do you really want for your children? And there was just creating that time and that space was just the best thing I had ever done.
So you hadn't sold a business at that point?
No, not at that point.
But it was on the cards that you were going to?
Yeah, they were running it while I just needed a break.
And was that trip then the decision maker that you said, yeah, I definitely want to leave?
That's it.
Gosh, you came back and how quickly then did you leave?
Oh, not pretty quickly. It was, yeah, pretty quickly.
And how did you feel walking away from the building for the last time?
It's been emotional. Yeah, it's really emotional.
Because you would have had team members there a long time.
Very much so. It's been a hard journey. There's been a lot of tears.
Did you feel a sense of grief?
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
I touched on this with Jack in a chat with Jack DeLosa recently, and no one prepared me for that sense of, and your identity. Yeah. Like, and for you, that's more so. I mean, my first business I was in for 5.5 years, but it was like the business was me.
Yeah.
I think it was actually having Lexi then that kind of gave me a new identity. It like does. I'm a mother, and then I was like, what else is there?
Yeah.
But that sense of, you know, and I would say it's 2 years ago since I sold my first business, but it's only quite recently I think that I actually moved through it fully and said, no, it's everything's kind of in its right place.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there was this huge sense of loss and just this vacuum of you devote so much, pump so much energy and time into this thing, and then it's just not there anymore. Yeah, it's like, It's like a bereavement. No, even if you choose it, it's bizarre.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's been a lot of tough times. I feel like now, even just coming into this year, I'm like, finally.
Cause it's been a year for you now, isn't it? Since you exited.
But, there's all of the grief and everything attached to that. But, I'm just ready for new things, and helping people now and doing the mentoring is like, it fills my heart. And I've made this decision for myself. I won't do anything anymore that doesn't feel right for my soul and my heart. And I love doing it. And I wish I had mentors and someone helping me for all those years. Cause I think I got my first mentor, Marianne Scherer from founder of T2 when I won the Vercly Cole Award.
Oh, wow.
And that was just life
changing. Cause was she a former winner as well? She was. Something. Yeah, she was.
So that was life changing for me. And that's where I want to spend my time and helping others now. And just all the lessons I've learned, if I can talk to people and have, you know, go through them with their business problems and make a difference and save them from losing that money or save them from making that mistake and offer some advice from the hard lessons I've learned is just makes me so happy.
Love. Yeah. So what are you doing now then? So you've exited a year ago. So also you're mentoring.
Yes.
You're writing your book.
Yeah. So I'm writing a book. So I'm writing a cookbook.
Yes.
Which will come out this year. Probably within the first half of this year.
Is the cookbook ready? Because from Sal and Maha, who are mutual friends of ours, it's like it's a beast doing a cookbook.
It is.
Is it ready? You've already tested the recipes and stuff.
Well, this is it. I've been writing recipes and all of this for kind of 18 years. So I've got a lot of it. I should be able to roll it out pretty quickly. And then I'm writing a business book about the story. Which will probably come out later on this year. And then I'm business mentoring. So I'm doing all that online and talking to people from wherever. And I want to do, retreats in New Zealand, obviously get people out into the wilderness and come and do these incredible retreats. So
will you do one this year?
Maybe towards the end, maybe September, we're looking at it. So
Amazing. Yeah. Oh, I've got a million and one questions still to ask you.
Okay.
Quick fire advice though. So if we were to think about someone who's just about to start her business, so she's listening, she's maybe starting the side hustle on the side, or she's about to quit her job next week and start her business. Yeah. What's one piece of advice you would give to that person?
Make sure you're passionate about what you're doing and don't expect amazing results straight away. You just got to, you know, work really hard at what you're doing, but don't expect to quit your job and start and then you're gonna learn a lot of money straight away. You've got to be kind of super committed, but to doing it out of passion and love is just like always number one.
I love that you said that, because I think also these success stories get glamorized because they're the ones that you hear about, the BRW fast starters or the award winners or the speakers or whatever it might be. When it's a really, really tough journey.
Yeah.
And I think we assume overnight success is kind of expected now.
Yeah.
And I think for me, like if I look back at my first business, like it was an overnight success. Like it took 6 months and it was moving. Like there was traction. It was really good. But this second business that I'm building, I'm realizing, oh shit, this is what people talk about.
Yeah.
Like the product market fit, like the all of the things. So I love that you've said that. Thank you. And for someone who's scaling, so maybe she's been in business 3, 4, 5 years and she's like, okay, I'm ready. I think I know what you're going to say. I'm ready to take this bigger. What advice would you give them?
Well, nail before you scale.
I knew you were going to say that.
Nail before you scale. Make sure you have projected the costings of growth.
Can you explain that a little bit?
I think I know what you mean, but I want to make sure.
So financially, you've got to have money behind you to be able to scale and grow. And whether that be buying in your packaging that you have to pay up 6 months ahead, do these big companies have buyback clauses, like really looking into those costings of how much it's going to cost to scale and who you're going to need to scale, and having, you know, that product absolutely right before you scale it up.
So if you were to almost have like a little mental checklist, if someone, so this person listening really wants to scale and they've got a checklist in their mind going, like what are the three, how do they know they're ready to scale? Like what are the three boxes you feel they should be able to tick?
Well, is your product scalable as it is? Like, is it simple and is it scalable easily? Number one. Number two, financial projections on how much it costs to scale.
So have you got the money in the bank to actually finance the scaling?
Or have you got a backup investor or somebody who's going to help you financially to scale, and what is involved in that. It's all good and well going, oh, we want to get this into Woolworths, but okay.
Because I think that's it, isn't it? You have this idea, and you've dispelled this myth for me that you get the call from Woolworths and that's it, your business changes overnight. They put in the massive order and you're like off to the Bahamas.
Yeah.
But I think what you've made me realize today, and probably a lot of people listening, is that there's actually the flip side to that is like you've actually got to spend a lot of money to get to that point where you can fulfill those orders.
100%. And being aware of how of the negotiations for them to get the price. They just get you down and get you down and get you down in price. And all of a sudden you may be doing double the turnover, but you're making less money. So what's the point? Why wouldn't you have just stayed with that small business where you're making a decent profit? Rather than going into somewhere like, you know, Woolworths, who's just going to take everything from you, including all of your energy. So I'm not saying it's never works, but just make sure you know what you're in for.
Yeah. I almost think about it like when I was preparing to give birth for the first time. It's like be informed.
Mm.
Being informed makes you empowered. So it's like being informed about
the
situation. Yeah. And then for someone who said, okay, cool, I think I'm ready to exit now. Time, what would you say to them?
So finding an investor and exiting a business needs to be well thought and well planned out ahead. Like, it takes a long time to do this process. So I think the one mistake that people do make is getting to a point where you're over it and don't really want the business. Oh, okay, I want to sell it now. Mm. And by that stage, it's not going to be worth what it maybe have been worth before.
So true. I've seen so many people that happens to. Yeah.
Yeah. So instead of, okay, going back to, and I know you do with your clients as I do with mine, is having those projections. What do you want in 2 and 5 years? And that this is one of the first things I talk to my clients about. Do you want to keep the, you know, what are we working towards ahead of time? And if you want to sell your business in 2 years' time, well, we need to be doing things very differently now than if you would be keeping the business. So it's a completely different model if you're planning to exit. And when you are planning to exit, how identifying who other people would buy it, how are you going to get that out there? And you've got to, if you really want to get the most out of exiting a business and selling it.
Oh, 100%. It's your blood, sweat and tears. Yeah, for sure.
So that would be.
And if I could, I think that's awesome. I would just add the, almost not plan for it, but don't be surprised if there's that level of that vacuum afterwards, because it's a thing.
Oh, like, yeah.
You're one of a few people I've talked about that.
That's it.
So all of this said, everything we've talked about in this chat, very wide ranging. And thank you so much for your honesty and just the, I love your sound bites. Nail it before you scale it. Love. I feel like I need like a t-shirt with that on it. So what do you feel is the biggest thing, everything we just talked about, what's the biggest learning that being a business has brought to you?
I think I was just going back to, you know, doing what you love and doing what you're good at. Don't, I love being a creative person. I loved at the start of Eat Fit Food when I made the meals and developed them and doing something I was clearly passionate about. Sometimes it can get to a stage where you're doing all the things that you didn't start out doing and you know, you don't enjoy it as much, and it became, Eat Fit Food became so big.
Mm.
It ended up just being about accounting and competition and all these things, which became so stressful. I'm like, hold on a minute, I'm not even doing anything that I love doing anymore. I love making meals and I love developing, you know, these new products, and that I became quite distant from that. So I think, making sure that you really are doing what you love, and what is it that you're really, really good at that you can put into the business, and don't move away from that completely because that is what makes your business successful in the first place, is you doing what you do really well and doing
and keeps your spark alive. It's like in a relationship, it keeps the spark going.
That's absolutely.
And I love that you said that, because I was actually going to mention that, and you said something else really interesting. I jumped into that when you were talking earlier about the three best things that you did in order to scale Eat Fit Food and doing what you did with it. You talked about doing what you love.
Yeah.
And I think that we can apply that on a macro level to like do what you love in terms of sell the thing that you love to sell. But also it's like trying as much as possible day to day, gearing your day towards the stuff that you love doing.
Yeah.
Because that's what's going to keep you energized. Like honestly, if I had to spend all day every day in Excel spreadsheets and checking contracts and dealing with shitty customers, I mean, I would be, I would lose my mind. I would lose my mind. But put that's me in a sales presentation or put me on a webinar or put me writing blog posts or doing Instagram lives. Yeah. Like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Do it every day of the week.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really, I love that we've ended on that note because I think it's doing what you love, obviously. And it's not that we get any of us, well, except Beyonce, maybe get to do all the shit we love all the time, but it's about gearing as much as, cause I think that's how you sustain the passion for it. And I think if it gets too wearisome, it's, I think a lot of the time for me anyway, it's cause I realize day after day, I'm doing stuff I actually don't really love doing. Yeah,
that's it. And outsource that stuff, and you know, you can outsource that stuff, and you can outsource the stuff that you don't like doing pretty cheaply these days.
Yes.
There's lots of different options.
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I think that's a whole other episode in its own right there, sourcing piece. Is there anything else you wanted to add that you feel we missed?
No, I think that's it. I think that's it.
Amazing. So well, so we'll obviously keep people posted on the book. And when is it actually due to come out?
Sorry?
When's the book due to come out?
The book on the business story later in the year. The cookbook will be first, probably mid-year.
So. Okay, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah, thank you so much.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
I so hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. You can probably hear from our chat that I could happily have talked to her for hours on end. Thank you so much, Bianca, for your incredible wisdom and your incredible candor. Yeah, I think you'll have helped so many people with this episode. So thank you so much. Bianca has a cookbook coming out in 2021, which I know I will be first in the line to buy. And she also offers business mentoring, as she mentioned in our chat too. If you'd like to connect with her, you can find her at biancamonley.com. That's M-O-N-L-E-Y. Or on Instagram at Bianca Monley. So until next week's episode, I will chat to you then. Goodbye. Thank you for being part of this week's episode. It was remarkable to have you. I am always keen to hear your thoughts, questions, ideas, and suggestions for future topics for the podcast. So please get in touch on Instagram. My handle is at Lorraine Remarks, and through my website, lorrainemurphy.com.au. If you're enjoying what I'm putting out here, please do rate, review, or subscribe to the podcast so more people can find out about it and we can build this special community. Or even better, do all three. Chat to you next week.